Welcome to the Ripple of Change podcast, searching for our quadruple aim, where we highlight, celebrate, and extol others doing positive things in healthcare and beyond. As a reminder, our quadruple aim is patient experience, quality care, lower costs, and provider wellness. I am your host, Dr. Todd R. Otten. I'm joined today by two amazing human beings. First, we have Betsy Dahl, who has so much courage I can't even begin to describe. She has the unfortunate experience of losing her husband, Matthew, who was a physician, hematologist, oncologist, to suicide on Thanksgiving Day in 2019. And as a result of that, she's written an amazing book, The Illusion of the Perfect Profession. And we also have Pamela Marie Hobby, who's an actor for over 25 years. A speaker, CEO of My Doctor's Meds, and perhaps most importantly, mom of two young children. So welcome to both of you. I am so glad you could join us today. It's a thrill to have you here. I'm going to throw a question at Pamela first, and I would like to hear your why around My Doctor's Meds.
So in the fall of 2019, I met a pediatric resident who was someone that was helping me get the ability to volunteer at a children's hospital in Iowa. And he was a stranger to me. And I started showing him pictures of me as a little kid. And I said, hey, you know, provider saved my life. Thank you for what you do. Keep going. It makes a difference. And he had a moment of realization that he was afraid that he was already starting to become numb to it all. And something deeply moved him just from our conversation. And he needed to hear me say, keep going. And I couldn't believe that it was hard for him in that moment. It didn't make sense to me. I just was excited to have a moment of humanity. And I went home and I started researching, and I found out that we lose a doctor a day to suicide on an MSNBC article that I read, and I could not believe it. I couldn't believe that we were failing the people that take care of us, that this was even possible. And after the research, I told my husband, I said, something deeply moved this pediatric resident, and I wonder if I could do something. I don't know what I could do, but let's start something. And it was through conversation of how to potentially be one person that could help that resident. And every time we get an opportunity, I think about him and I've connected with him further. But yeah, it was through his tears and a hopelessness in his eyes that I was scared that he was at the beginning of his life for caring for others and potentially already burnt out in ways.
Yeah, and we're realizing that these issues are happening earlier and earlier and earlier in the training process. And that in and of itself is concerning. I've read some recent articles where 25% of medical students have no plans to practice clinically. You know, with the shortage that we already have in the United States as it is, for just a whole host of reasons, that's just adding fuel to the fire, so to speak. Now, Betsy, how did the two of you come to meet? Because I know that you guys are pretty good friends, at least from what I hear and what I've seen already in recording this.
I found your book on an Instagram post from, I think it was the Dr. Lorna Breen Foundation, putting something up about your book. And I read the caption, but the title captured me, The Illusion of the Perfect Profession, because I went, that's My Doctor's Meds. And something grabbed me and I knew I had to buy the book.
Well, so sweet of you. So yeah. And then she reached out and we set up some time to talk. And I don't even remember. I mean, it was over a year ago, right, Pamela?
Yeah.
And so we've just continued to talk. I think her concept and what she's doing is so fantastic. It really moved me. You know, I talk all over the country about this unfortunate situation and, you know, our story, my story of being married to an oncologist for 16 years before he took his own life. And one of the common things I hear from physicians on how we can help is just to simply thank them. And it seems so simple. And after Matt died, I was going through his desk and I found a whole file full of thank you notes from his patients. And it makes me tear up, because that just meant so much to him. And it's such an easy thing that all of us can do, because we're all patients. If we're not right now, we will be someday. And so the fact that Pamela actually started this whole company based around thanking, you know, physicians, I just was like greatly moved. So we've stayed in touch, and she's pretty special.
There is so much power in those comments. I'm struggling to hold back tears myself. You know, I was going to say, I have a feeling there's going to be some tears shed in this episode, you know, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I've cried with patients before. And Betsy, to be honest with you, I did the exact same thing. Every year I had a bulletin board in my office, and I would put up thank you notes or some things from patients or whatever. And it was inspiring, and it would help to ground me, and it helped to center me, and it helped to fill up my cup. I did realize that when, like, I was, you know, pinning things on top of one another, that I would need to refresh it every year. But I still have all those mementos, and they mean a lot. They really do. They really do.
I remember when we first talked, Betsy, and I said, may you think of me when you think about those thank you notes, because it's the core of what we do. A simple thank you or a simple check-in could be what that person needs. And we don't take the time to do it.
You know, it's interesting because we're about a week out from Doctor's Day as we're recording this, and I can't convey enough to the audience how valuable it is to thank your clinician, whether it's a physician, a nurse, whoever. Say thank you to them. Ask how they're doing. Smile. You know, write them a card. It means so much. It truly does. It truly does. Betsy, I can't help but think about the courage it took to write the book. I'd love to maybe for you to walk us through that a little bit and tell us whatever you want about it. I would love to hear more.
Yeah. So basically, in a nutshell, condensed down story is my husband and I and our three children moved to North Carolina from Minnesota in August of 2019. And we were all super excited about the moves. I'd been sick of the cold weather. My oldest son had struggled with bullies at school. Matt's job in Minnesota had just gotten more and more stressful. He was with a very large, prominent private practice for 16 years. And we just thought maybe moving to a better climate and Matthew having a fresh start with a smaller private practice would just do us all good. And so we were really, really excited about it. And we got here, and we were here for about a week. And the job turned out not to be a good fit for Matthew. And, you know, I was like, well, we'll move. You know, I mean, we had kept our lake home up in northern Minnesota. And I thought, well, we have a place to go. We can just leave. Well, he just really couldn't wrap his head around doing that. He felt like a fool and felt like a failure. He had a non-compete in North Carolina. He had a non-compete in Minneapolis, where he had just come from. And there were several factors that were extremely stressful in his world. So we were here for like about a week, and he started saying this was career suicide. And I feel like I'm watching a slow car crash. He said it over and over and over again. And, you know, Matt was kind of a character. He was kind of larger than life and tended to be dramatic sometimes. And I was like, dude, like, come on. This is not that bad. I mean, it's a job. Let's just quit. Well, he just couldn't wrap his head around it. So I didn't have anybody here since I didn't know anybody yet.
Yeah.
So I would literally walk around my neighborhood and just kind of crying. I would talk to my mom on the phone. I would, you know, talk to God out loud. I would pray. And I just felt this, like, God wrap his arms around me and say, buckle up, it's going to be a bumpy ride. And, you know, kind of whispered, like, you need to write. And so every morning I would get up and I would write. And I was literally documenting everything that was happening, because it was so unreal and so out of character He was the strongest person I ever knew. He put his mind to something and he did it. It was bizarre. It was like watching somebody get cancer and not be able to get through to him that he needed help. So that's kind of how the book, like that was the baby. But if it were real estate agent, I'm not a writer. I didn't go to school to write. I'm like an investor. I'm a flipper. I remodel constantly. And that's my wheelhouse. So it was not easy to write the book. I just felt very called to do it.
I mean, it speaks to the power of these stories. You know, there are so many unfortunate stories that echo what you've just conveyed, you know, all over the country and way too frequent. And I think it speaks to the power of why all three of us are doing what we're doing. And, you know, I think about the domino effects of how I met you, Betsy, and how that led to me meeting Pamela. And here we are all talking, you know, about some very difficult topics. In fact, Betsy, when I finished reading your book, I literally sat staring at my phone, debating whether to text you a positive message because I didn't want to, I just wasn't sure. And then I'm like, you know what? God's telling me to text her.
Yeah.
And I hope it's received the way I meant it to be received. And here we are. So I was going to try and weave in another thread here, if you will, to this story of how we're all connected to the Lorna Breen Heroes Foundation. Pamela, do you want to start us off on this one?
Early on building my doctor's meds, I remember TJ looking at me and saying, policy has to be moved for these physicians and clinicians to get more help within institutions. Who's going to be moving policy? Who's going to be requiring this? And I remember him saying that. And then now I'm watching it with the Dr. Lorna Breen Heroes Foundation of Corey Feist actually sitting in front of Congress and actually saying, we need a Provider Protection Act. These institutions require more money for more programs, for more support. And I love how they say more help care for health care, because that's the goal. And so I was deeply moved at the progress that they were making. And I remember reaching out to Corey and I just started writing him emails. He didn't know who I was, but I just started writing him emails. Honestly, it was just because I was so excited about the progress that he was making and I had to tell him. And it was through that, through really watching them dig deep and say, we need to band like minds together. We need to band physicians, authors. I'm simply a former patient. And so I was invited to the table, thank goodness. But there's some really impressive people that he banded together so that this foundation could really celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. Lorna Breen. And it shouldn't take losing people. We need to do more. And I was really excited that I was even invited as an ambassador. But the fact that they're moving policy so that these can be requirements and that we can support physicians even more on them being able to raise their hand for help and being able to say something's not right. And anyway, I'm a huge champion of them. And I love that they, even this net of meeting Betsy and then knowing that she was also deeply involved, I'm meeting even more authors deeply involved. And just this opportunity for us to share what we do. They're doing things that require Herculean strength and they're doing.
I think it's amazing. And I obviously am a huge advocate for trying to consolidate or combine or amplify the voices of not just physicians and clinicians, but also the patients. Because I really think if we get enough people, I don't know if sounding the alarm is the right way to say it, or raising awareness in the right direction, it will lead to changes. And Betsy, you had the pleasure of meeting some of these wonderful individuals in person this week, I believe. Is that true?
That is true. Yeah. I was in BC on Monday and Tuesday of this week for the All In Wellbeing First for Healthcare kind of initiative. And it was quite moving. There were over 220 people registered for the event. And I met Corey for the first time. I've been talking to Corey for several years now. Lorna killed herself 5 months after Matt took his own life. So we started communicating early on, and I started, you know, I tell everybody, I just wrote a book. They're the ones doing the heavy lifting with changing laws. And, you know, one of the common things, well, actually, Matthew and Lorna had a lot of things in common. They were both 49 years old, and they both thought that they were going to lose their medical license if they sought help. And, you know, it was a very chaotic time for my family at that point when Matt got so sick. And it was super confusing. And I, like I said, I'm not in the medical field. I'm not in that world. I just kept thinking, this is really strange that my husband, who has served the medical community for over 16 years, would lose his medical license because he needed to seek treatment. I couldn't believe it. I didn't know if it was true or not. He thought it was true. Lorna thought it was true. And so I am just so in awe and so grateful for Corey and Jennifer. I mean, here's a man that quit his law practice to do this hard work. And it is hard work. And they've done an incredible job in such a short amount of time.
I echo everything you just said. And I've had the pleasure to meet Corey as well. Medicine Forward is a tier one collaborator. And so I've got the blessing of sitting at the all-in meetings and conversing with these wonderful individuals. And Medicine Forward's got a really cool project, as you both are aware, doing an audio documentary, trying to shout these initiatives and the work that's being done, not just to a few people, but to the entire country, to break down those barriers to appropriate treatment for clinicians, in particular for physicians. I'll put in the shameless plug, I suppose, because the timing seems right. So the project is called Prescribe Hope, and we're super, super excited about it. So clearly, we've all got this common thread of losing someone that we loved and cared for, you know, in one way or another over time. So why don't we shift gears a little bit and do a ripple challenge question to add some levity to the conversation, perhaps. Both Betsy and Pamela are aware that I was doing a TV interview this morning. And so I would like to know, what feeling do you have right before you are interviewed or go on a show or go on a podcast? Pamela, why don't we start with you?
Sure. I go back to this stage play I did out on a hot tin roof. And I remember the moment it was over. I was becoming so anxious to get on stage that it was in that moment that I was like, from now on, I will own these nerves. I will lock it in. And I'm just going to go out on that stage. And for some reason, I always think of that feeling. And I see myself literally backstage about to walk on. And I hear the words, lock it in. For some reason, I know that sounds so cheesy. and then we just dive in. Whatever it may be, audition, doesn't matter.
What a great mindset. That is fantastic. How about you, Betsy? Do you have specific feelings or emotions before you get bombarded with questions or there's a camera at you?
You know what? It's so funny. I actually try not to think about anything until, you know, we're just right there. I don't tend to get nervous about these situations and podcasts and my speaking events, I guess because it's my life. So I can speak to it quite well. And, you know, as hard and difficult as our story, our journey has been, I also have a lot of blessings that I've come out on it. And I have a really, really great life. So I don't focus on what people are going to think of me or how my message will be received. I just speak my truth.
That's beautiful. Unfortunately, I only felt like I was going to throw up 3 times this morning. And what's interesting about it is I don't get nervous really for the podcast or public speaking either. But like, we sat down to talk and I was like, is the red light on? Are we videoing this? Like, am I supposed to? Pam, I'm going to come back to you with a question. What was your inspiration for the title of your company? I mean, I know we talked about like sort of the why. Where did the title come from?
You know, Betsy challenged me to say where, you know, I was so in love with the title of her book because the book title allows you to almost already be reading the book. And so she asked me, one time you said, how did you come up with my doctor's meds? And I dug out a journal. I was making sure that I was journaling. My grandfather, Papa Joe, was a big believer in journaling, and he journaled every day of his life. And I remember watching him do it religiously. And so I thought, as I embarked on my doctor's meds, I wanted to start journaling. I don't know, in a way to kind of honor him and just think I wanted to have some semblance of what was going on and what I was thinking at the time. And I found that page. My husband and I sat down and we probably came up with 20, 25, then it became a list of 50 of what we were going to call this thing, because we didn't know. We knew that if we're losing a doctor a day to suicide, and we could possibly do something from the patient's perspective for a patient to reach back, at patients that wanted to, could reach back and really truly be grateful and thank them, what kind of feeling would that be? And then we kept kind of saying my doctor's medicine. I would share stories about Dr. Pam. I would share stories as we were realizing what this thing was. I called it a baby giraffe at first. You know, we didn't know what the company was going to be. We just knew that there was a possibility that we could make a difference somehow from the patient perspective. And then we shortened it to my doctor's meds. And it was kind of just easy to, the words kind of came out of our mouths easily. And we realized that it's the medicine that they need sometimes. They're always taking care of us. How can we kind of fill them back up? What are the medicines of the thank yous? What can the gratitude do? What can they take with them to help heal them, to help them get better? And so we started on those kinds of ideas before we landed on them. What could they take with them after a program of ours that felt like medicine?
That's just intriguing. So intriguing. Cause I thought that's where the title kind of had evolved from, but I wasn't 100% sure. And so I was really dying to ask that question. And then I guess maybe to double click on that a little bit or unpack it a little bit more. When you go to present, like, take me through that day and then how it's received and so on and so forth.
I always think back to this nonprofit clinic in Sepulpa, Oklahoma. It's called Cura for the World. And a friend of mine built this clinic, and it was sort of in the middle of nowhere in Oklahoma, but they desperately needed a community hospital. And when they reached out, I said, I'm so excited to be a part of your opening for this new facility. And please let me know if I can just do a little bit of something at the very end to thank the people that are there. Because even the people that were opening the facility, some of them were volunteers, some of them were clinicians. And it wasn't until I got there and I started setting up to do a little thing at the end that there was a woman that pulled me to the side and she said, I'm just a pharmacist, you know, but I'm so glad that you're here. And we know about your story that providers saved your life. And I started talking literally to the people within the walls of that clinic. And some of them were physicians that were driving all the way from Tulsa that had, they were practicing in Tulsa, but would help this community almost an hour drive. That on their off hours, air quotes, off hours, they were helping this community that needed this clinic. And it was right next to this church. And so I'll walk you through basically, we intake where we're going to do these speeches. And that starts to change us as a company because we're actually seeing where these clinicians are doing their work. They're pouring their hearts out. We're seeing the communities that they're changing. We're seeing the church patrons coming to this opening of this community clinic. I'm getting chills thinking about it. But, you know, we intake where we can be effective of the facility, whether as small or as large or even a break room as it is. I've even told my phlebotomist at Kaiser, I said, get me in your break room. You know, you guys have 10, 15 minutes. It doesn't have to be this big drawn out 50 minute, you know, fancy presentation. And he's like, I'm going to talk to my boss about that. You know, sometimes it doesn't have to be a very formal thing in a fancy theater. And that Cura for the World clinic reminded me that it can be something so heartfelt and and just what someone needs.
That's amazing. Cause that little touch point, it can be just a little touch point can be the fork in the road to go one direction or another. And actually I'd like to maybe echo some of these sentiments to you, Betsy. I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, that after you've spoken that you've had physicians or other clinicians or others come up to you and say something to the effect of, this is where I'm at. thanks for inspiring me to go maybe get the help I need or get some coaching or whatever. Is that true? And if so, I'd love to hear an example of it.
Well, I will say on Monday, or I'm sorry, it was Tuesday when I was in DC, I got up and just said a few words and the room went silent. And then everybody started clapping, which of course made me start crying like I do a lot. But I will say probably 15 people came up to me afterwards and said, thank you so much for reminding us of why we're doing this, why everybody is sitting in this room. And it just, that's what my story adds. I add that personal touch that people need to hear the real life stories. I have received several emails. I get Facebook messages, emails, texts from people actually all over the world. And that has been extremely moving. My, you know, when I was writing the book, my publisher was like, well, who's your target market? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I think it's physician spouses. It's anybody that has been touched by suicide. But I will say I do, unfortunately, get a lot of calls from wives of husbands who have died by suicide. And those are really, really hard phone calls to take. I had one in August and I picked up the phone and actually my boyfriend and I were walking into brunch and this woman was just sobbing. And I'm like, hello, you know, hello. And she said, I just, you know, finished your book. And I was like, okay, I'm sorry. Like, who is this? And she's like, I'm so sorry. You know, she told me your name. And she's like, my husband just killed himself. And I was like, oh, I am so sorry. I am at a loss for words. And she said, your book, I just finished it. It was my story. It's our story. And so, you know, speaking to other spouses, I can really relate. And I feel fortunate enough to be in the position to be able to help them. I'm 4 years out. And I tell everybody, you know, there is hope. You can have a great life. You need to continue on. Grief is a really, it's a hard thing to have to live with, but you need to figure out how you're going to live with it and do so, you know, gracefully and without regret. You need to move forward. I always tell people we don't move on. I mean, I'm never going to move on from Matt Gall, but I'm moving forward with my life. And that's what I tell our children too. So those kind of stories and those kind of conversations that I've had have been really meaningful. But I've also had some fun ones too. A doctor reached out once and he said, and he actually had knew my husband, you know, if they worked in the same hospital, didn't know each other well, but he said, I learned from your book, Betsy, that it's never too late to make new friends. Because when I moved to North Carolina, you know, I had these seven women that came into my life and they were so amazing. And they still are my best friends here. But he's like, I'm 56 and I didn't know that I could really still meet new friends at this stage in the game. And so that was actually really fun.
You're such a messenger for this and helping people through grief. I have to tell you, as your book gives people hope, the very first time we spoke, I was at a crossroads of, is this thing ever going to take off? Because I had to continue to water the plant. I knew it was going to take a while for my doctor's meds. I knew I was going to have to meet a lot of people. I could not get that pediatric resident out of my head because that mission had found me, but can I continue? And your words, Betsy, as we spoke, you were giving me hope that this could find legs, that this could find a voice, that this could find a way to people's hearts. And I'm telling you, I remember exactly where I pulled over to have that conversation with you. And your journey through giving people hope deeply affected the trajectory of me being able to continue.
Well, that is beyond touching. And I love that. Thank you. I think you give me way too much credit, but I mean, that's awesome. That's awesome. I think when I reached out to doctors, I just did an interview over in the UK and he said, well, what can we do? I was like, I reached out to several friends and several physicians, and this is what they're telling me. They just want to be thanked. And it's just so incredibly simple. You know, even, I mean, I know that a lot of hospitals have things in place, but I'm sure Dr. Otten, you can talk to this. I mean, if somebody tells you to go do yoga or take time to meditate one more time, you're like going to lose your mind. It's so simple to thank our providers. And I was always so touched. I mean, Matt would sometimes come home when I was pregnant with Sophie. I think he came home with three different baby blankets that his patients had knit for him. And I'm thinking, these people have cancer. They have cancer and they're like thinking of me. Like, how is this even? And Matt, like, how is this even possible? And it is just so moving. So I will tell you, every time now when I go to the doctor, and Sophie, my daughter, and I were just at her pediatrician the other day, I just brought in Starbucks gift cards. And I'm like, I don't know who needs these, but I'm just going to drop these off. You guys have a tough job. They're all like, really? Wow. Thanks. I mean, it was just nothing. It's just little nothings that matter, you know? A simple act of kindness can go a really long way.
And Taka, in your book, the line of silver, it says, you know, the Linus Silver often wondered who he spent his life caring for others. And he often silently wondered who cared for him.
Mm-hmm. And well, and that's why suicide is so, a doctor's suicide is so complex. Because what I stood up and said the other day in DC was, my husband went to work every single day to save lives. And then he took his own. So it doesn't even make sense. I mean, you can't really even wrap your brain around it. I would say 99.9% of physicians, that's why they go into medicine, is they're there to help and make a difference. And then they need help and they're not getting it. And I mean, this is a daunting subject and we could sit here and go on for hours. But I mean, truly, the entire U.S. health system needs to be overhauled. And it starts in med school. And we just had a resident, Dr. West, who died by suicide like a week and a half ago.
Yeah,
I mean, this has to stop. This has to stop. I mean, every single U.S. citizen should be extremely worried about this, because a doctor shortage is gonna affect everybody. I mean, we're already there. It's just going to get worse. And especially when you have doctors telling their own children to not go into medicine because it's so hard, so much work, expensive, and the reward is just diminished. It's just keeps diminishing.
You make a great point. If you had asked me 15, 20 years ago about being a physician, I love seeing patients, Betsy. I love it. In fact, I'm going back to do a part-time role with an ER group as a direct primary care physician. Partly because I got to write my own job description. So I guess that's probably a big part of why it seems very enticing. But 20 years ago, it would have been an easy yes. Now, I would have to take some serious consideration if you were to ask me that question. And the joy of medicine is hard to truly describe to somebody who hasn't been in that position before. But I think it speaks to what we're all trying to accomplish, right? We're all trying to get the word out there, create awareness at major levels, you know, with, as I mentioned, with the project that we hope to collaborate with many institutions on. We want to get this to not just hundreds or thousands of individuals. We want this audio documentary to go to millions of individuals. Mm-hmm. And with, you know, Matthew, who's helping us with this, with his previous history, we think that's going to happen. So I this has been just tremendous. It's always a blessing to sit here and just listen to the stories and feel the emotions, hear the words, and realize that there are so many wonderful individuals trying to move the needle in our healthcare system, such as the two of you. I'd like to give you both a chance to maybe impart one final thought. And this is the opportunity for the plugs right here. Like, so whatever plugs you want to give, fire away, and then I'll finish off. Pamela, I think I'm going to let you go first, if that's okay.
It's actually directly related to what we were talking about, what Betsy was saying. We talk about, in my doctor's meds, that there's this carousel analogy, and that doctors and patients get on a carousel together, and they go through the diagnosis, they go through meeting people, they go through learning about their lives and their family. And then, you know, because of HIPAA, the patient gets off the ride, or the patient gets better, or maybe the patient doesn't get better, but the provider is still on the carousel, and the carousel is still going, and they're still meeting more patients and meeting more families. And that's sort of where we live. We want the provider not to have to be on that carousel all of the time alone, that we can take the providers and their families, and we can take the patients and their families and kind of reunite, and also just inspire people to say thank you, because that carousel just continues to go, and they continue to help people, and they continue to carry burdens. And the lives that they touch, I have a physician assistant that said I've helped over 5,000 patients, and I know their families. And if we lose that one physician or clinician, then all of those families suffer as well. And so I'm hoping that we can kind of complete the circle of the carousel, and that more patients can really, really be part of this healing journey.
Holy smokes. That one hits me hard, because I know that feeling all too well of I could have, would have, should have, or what have you. But thank you. That's just very, very powerful. Pamela, where can people find you, and what's the website people should be going to learn more about your work, and then have you come into their institution to make a difference and help turn this ship around?
Sure. Our contact info is on mydoctorsmeds.com. You can reach out directly through our website. All of our social handles are at mydoctorsmeds. And reach out. We would love to have conversations. Conversations create opportunities. So just reach out, and we would love to be of service however we can for your institution.
Love it. Thank you so, so much. And Betsy, any parting thoughts from you and or specific plugs you'd like to impart to the audience?
Well, I will just say one last thing. It made me very sad, and it made Matthew very sad. He came home one day and he said, "I love my patients, but I hate my job." And that was really a turning point, because he loved his patients. And wouldn't everybody be so lucky to have such a caring physician in their life? We need to do more. We need to do better. I have a girlfriend who was an OBGYN here in North Carolina, one of the seven women I talk about in my book. And she came over one afternoon and said, "Betsy, I love my patients, but I hate my job." And she left and she quit. And I thought, you know, now the state of North Carolina is down another doctor. And it was a really tough decision, because she went to school. You know, you guys are at, I mean, you go to so much school, and there's so much training involved and so much blood, sweat, and tears, that to walk away is a really big, hard decision. And I just think we all really need to be aware of that. We need to do anything and everything we can to make our physicians' lives easier, not more difficult. And so I will just leave it with that. I think we all can play a role, and just simply by being kind, can, you know, a little kindness can go a long way.
Amen. This was absolutely fantastic. And if I had one plug, it would be for the audience to check out the project Prescribe Hope through Medicine Forward. We are looking to shout these types of changes to the world through this project. As always, we will end with, what positive ripple of change will you create today?